Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. On today's show, we will take you on a tour around the world.
That's right. But you will not need to pack a bag or find a friend to water your houseplants. Today, we continue counting down the top cities in the world to visit. On yesterday's program, Jonathan Evans counted down from 20 to 11.
We finish the countdown today with Marcia James and Ashley Thompson joining Jonathan in giving us the top 10 best cities in the world to visit. So let's all be armchair travelers, people who read about travel, and take off for destination number 10.
Number 10, Cape Town, South Africa. Cape Town shines at the southern point of the African continent. Explore Table Mountain National Park, which stretches along the Atlantic coast from Signal Hill to Cape Point. At Boulder's Beach near Cape Point, share the sands with nearly 3,000 African penguins. Within the national park is Lion's Head Peak. Walk up Lion's Head for excellent views of the coast and Robben Island, which held Nelson Mandela as a political prisoner for 27 years.
Number 9. Paris, France. The French capital is often called the most beautiful city in the world. Known as the City of Light, Paris is home to some of the world's most visited tourist sites, including the Eiffel Tower, the Louvre Museum, Moulin Rouge, and the Notre Dame Cathedral. Escape the crowds and feel like a Parisian at one of the city's many sidewalk cafes. Sip on an espresso and people watch for a more relaxed way to get to know the city.
Number 8. Buenos Aires, Argentina. Romance is in the air in South America's most European-style city. The city is known for wide streets, beautiful cafes, an exciting social life. Take a walk through the historic San Telmo on a Sunday, and you will see couples dancing the tango, Argentina's famed dance. If you like soccer, don't miss the famous La Bombonera Stadium, home of the Boca Juniors Soccer Club.
Number 7. Rome, Italy. The 2,500-year-old city is a perfect destination for history lovers. For centuries, visitors have flocked to its famous sites, the Colosseum, the Pantheon, Trevi Fountain, and more. Within Rome is Vatican City, the smallest independent state in the world. It is the headquarters of the Roman Catholic Church and ruled by Pope Francis. The Sistine Chapel and St. Peter's Basilica are favorite sites.
Number 6. London, England. The largest city in Western Europe is a world capital of culture and fashion. Visitors can tour rooms in Buckingham Palace, the official home of the Queen of England. They can investigate the Sherlock Holmes Museum or walk across Abbey Road, just like the band The Beatles did in 1969.
I'm Mario Ritter. You are listening to the VOA Learning English program, As It Is. After a short break, our countdown will continue. We will hear the top 5 best cities in the world to visit.
Welcome back. This weekend on As It Is, we are counting down the top 10 best cities in the world to visit.
And in the top half of today's show, we covered cities 10 through 6. Now we finish with the top 5.
And now our colleagues, Marcia, Ashley, and Jonathan, bring the... And now our colleagues, Marcia, Ashley, and Jonathan, bring the 5 top cities to visit in the world. Let's pick up where we left off with city number 5.
Number 5. Prague, Czech Republic. This Eastern European city is the modern capital of the Czech Republic and the historical capital of the Kingdom of Bohemia. Walk across the Charles Bridge and visit the John Lennon Wall to get a sense of the city's quiet revolutionary soul. From the unique art of David Czerny, often hidden in plain sight, to the growing counterculture scene, Prague is full of surprises.
Number 4. Hanoi, Vietnam. Vietnam's capital has tree-lined streets, lakes, and some 600 temples and pagodas. A lot of VOA Learning English Facebook fans live in Hanoi. They have many suggestions for exploring their city. Nguyen Bui says visitors should not miss the Temple of Literature. It was built in the year 1070. It is one of several temples in Vietnam dedicated to Confucius.
Number 3. Istanbul, Turkey. Turkey's largest city has one foot in Europe and the other in Asia. As the former capital of the Roman, Byzantine, and Ottoman empires, Istanbul is a haven for history lovers. Visitors must see Istanbul's most famous religious buildings, the Hagia Sophia and Blue Mosque. At night, sail on the Bosporus Strait, which separates the European and Asian areas of this extraordinary city. Our Facebook friend Oguzan says all who visit Istanbul should try the sweets called Turkish Delights and some extra-strong Turkish coffee.
Number 2. Siem Reap, Cambodia. The small city of Siem Reap is home to Angkor Wat, the world's largest religious monument. Visitors can also see hundreds of ancient Buddhist temples in and around town. After a long day at the temples, tourists can enjoy one of Siem Reap's many bars, restaurants, and nightclubs.
Number 1. Marrakesh, Morocco. Marrakesh is known as the Red City for its rose-colored buildings. The city's walled medina, or old city, is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. 1,000-year-old monuments remain within the medina, including the Qutubiya Mosque, the Kasbah, and several gardens. Today, the medina is a crowded marketplace with traditional Moroccan goods for sale. Make sure to visit the Gemma Alfna Square, an outdoor theater where storytellers and musicians perform.
And there you have it, a list of the top 10 cities in the world to visit. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories.
Bonjour. Just kidding. We are speaking English. But today, we are featuring French words that we use in English.
For example, May Day is an emergency code word. It is used around the world in voice communications. You might see a war movie in which an airplane has been hit by rocket fire. The pilot gets on his radio and calls, "Mayday, Mayday, Mayday," to tell that his plane is in danger of crashing to the ground.
Mayday, 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 9815 Lima, I'm in trouble, Mayday, Mayday, Mayday!
But Mayday has nothing to do with the month of May. It comes from the French expression, venez m'aider, or Mayday, which means help me.
Frederick Stanley Mockford created the Mayday call signal in the 1920s. Mr. Mockford was a radio officer at Croydon Airport in London. He was asked to think of a word that could be used in an emergency. The word had to be easily understood by all pilots and airport workers. Much of the air traffic at that time was between London and Paris, so he proposed the word Mayday.
Today, many groups use Mayday to mean a life-threatening emergency. The call is always given three times to prevent mistaking it for some similar-sounding words.
Many other French words are commonly used in English. One of these is even in the Learning English Word Book. It is sabotage. Sabotage means to destroy or damage as an act of subversion against an organization or nation. A person who sabotages is a saboteur. Bad crime, lovely word.
In economics or politics, you may have heard the term laissez-faire. It means to leave alone and not interfere. It was first used in France in the 18th century.
In the business world, entrepreneur is another French word. It means a person who starts and operates a new business and has responsibility for any risks involved.
Many French words are used in the arts. For example, a film noir is a movie about murder and other crimes. These films were popular in the 1940s and 50s. Anything in art, music, or literature which is very modern or ahead of its time is called avant-garde.
In the arts or any industry, you prepare a resume if you are looking for a job. A resume documents your education, skills, and experience. While every professional needs a resume, each one is unique. In other words, each is one of a kind.
Food is not unique to France, but the French are famous for their food. So it makes sense that many cooking terms we use in American English are French. All cooks need to know how to sauté. This is frying something quickly in a small amount of oil or butter.
Flambé is a technique by which alcohol is added to a dish and then lit on fire. This is both for effect and to burn off the alcohol. When you are eating at a restaurant, the server may tell you bon appétit, which means good appetite, or enjoy your meal.
And if you go away, someone may wish you bon voyage, or have a good trip. This program was written by Shelley Gollist. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And I'm Anna Mateo. You can find more words in their stories at our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Au revoir!
Thank you. I'm Shirley Griffith.
And I'm Steve Ember with People in America in VOA Special English. Today we tell about James Baldwin, one of the most important American writers of the 20th century. Critics praised him for honestly and bravely examining race relations and identity in the United States.
James Baldwin wrote more than 20 novels, reports, and commentary, plays, and poetry. He wrote most of them during the 1950s and 60s. Some critics say his first book, Go Tell It on the Mountain, was his best effort at storytelling. The book is based on his early life. James Baldwin was born in 1924 in New York City. He grew up in a mostly black area of New York called Harlem. During the 1930s, the United States was suffering an economic crisis called the Great Depression. Many African Americans, including his family, were even poorer than white Americans. James Baldwin was the oldest child in a family of nine. He never knew his biological father. When he was 3 years old, his mother married a factory worker. James grew up with a severe stepfather. He writes about a similar difficult relationship between father and son in Go Tell It on the Mountain. Another similarity between the book and the writer's life is the importance of Christianity and the church. James's stepfather was also a preacher in a small church in a business area of Harlem. Such religious centers that were former stores were called storefront churches. They were common in African American areas.
The boy in Go Tell It on the Mountain struggles between choosing to be like his father or doing something else with his life. The events happen on one day, the boy's 14th birthday. In the end, he decides to do what his father wants. James Baldwin faced a similar struggle. He became a preacher in his stepfather's church for 3 years. But at age 17, he left the church. This struggle and his experience in the church greatly influenced his writing. Critics and Baldwin himself have said the Christian holy book, the Bible, influenced his writing. Critics also said he writes the way African American clergy speak in church. Baldwin uses similar words, sentence rhythms, and descriptions. Jazz and blues music traditions also influenced his writing. All these have made his writing more powerful and emotionally moving. James Baldwin blamed Christianity for providing support to slavery. He also criticized some black Christians for using their religion as an excuse to accept oppression. But Baldwin also praised Christianity for helping African Americans join together to fight racism.
The book, Go Tell It on the Mountain, also describes how and why the boy's parents moved separately from the South to New York City. They were part of a great movement of Southern blacks to the Northern United States in the first half of the 20th century. It was called the Great Migration. African Americans moved to escape Southern laws on racial separation. Also, there was not enough farm work for everyone, while jobs in industries were increasing in the northern states. Baldwin explains this historical event in the personal stories of one family. His expert storytelling brings history to life.
James Baldwin said he had to write Go Tell It on the Mountain so that he could write everything else. He also said he realized at a very young age that he did not have very much as a black person in America. But he knew he had his brain. So he spent a lot of time in libraries reading. And he began to write for his school magazine. James Baldwin finished high school at about the same time that he realized that he did not want to continue as a church preacher. He left home and moved to an area of New York City called Greenwich Village. The area was popular with artists. Baldwin got jobs that did not pay much. He was very poor, but he continued to write. He published reports in magazines, such as the Partisan Review and The Nation. They were not very widely read. Baldwin communicated with Richard Wright, a well-known African-American writer. Wright helped Baldwin get financial help to travel to Europe to write. He went to Paris and London in 1948. Baldwin lived in Paris and the south of France for the next 6 years. He also lived in Istanbul, Turkey. He wrote Go Tell It on the Mountain, which was published in 1953. Critics in the United States announced the arrival of a great new voice in American writing, but the book did not become popular until much later.
In 1955, the essays and commentary Baldwin had written earlier were collected and published in a book. It is called Notes of a Native Son. He wrote about social, political, and cultural issues facing black people in America. He also told of his experience as a black man in Europe. Critics praised the book for clearly dealing with one of the most troubling issues of that time, racism. Baldwin continued to write stories based on his experiences. Giovanni's Room was published in 1956. It is about a white American man in Paris who loves both an Italian man and an American woman. The book is about the struggle to accept one's sexuality. James Baldwin faced a similar struggle. His former religion condemned homosexuality, as did most of society. So it was difficult for Baldwin to accept himself. He wrote about the same issue in his next book, Another Country. This book is mainly based in New York City. It explores race, sex, and identity among artists. Some critics said Another Country and Giovanni's Room were not very good books. But James Baldwin wrote openly and bravely about subjects that many people would not discuss in public in those days.
Up in Harlem every Saturday night when the high browns get together.
Critics praised Baldwin's books that directly examined true events more than they praised his fiction. His book, The Fire Next Time, became one of the best-selling books of 1963. It was called a powerful and leading voice of the civil rights movement. African Americans and liberal white Americans increased demands and demonstrations for equal rights for black people and other minorities. Many activists went to the southern states to help more black people sign up to vote. Baldwin left Europe for some time to take part in this action. The fire next time is in the form of two letters. In the first, Baldwin tells a young family member about the problems he faced as a black man in America. Baldwin also tells him to be strong and fight for justice. The second letter is to America. Baldwin warns that race relations are so bad that something terrible might happen if they do not improve. He urges white Americans to change for their own good because they cannot live without their black brothers. The writer says love is the only way for America not to destroy itself. The Fire Next Time was an influential book. It made Baldwin even more famous. His picture appeared on the cover of Time magazine. The Fire Next Time remains one of his most widely read books.
James Baldwin wrote short stories, books, and plays throughout the 1970s and early 80s. He continued to explore issues of race, religion, sexual identity, and history. These books include The Amen Corner, Tell Me How Long the Train's Been Gone, and If Beale Street Could Talk. His last book, The Evidence of Things Not Seen, was published in 1985. Baldwin lived both in the United States and France during this time. He taught in colleges, including the University of Massachusetts. He supported new African-American writers, who later became famous, such as Toni Morrison and Maya Angelou. James Baldwin was made a commander of the French Legion of Honor in 1986. He also received many awards in the United States. James Baldwin died at his home in southern France in 1987. But his voice lives on in the books that young people still read in many American classrooms and around the world. Critics say his urgent warning that we must learn to accept one another's differences is still important today.
Our program was written by Doreen Bangana and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Shirley Griffith. You can download transcripts and archives of our shows at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.
Go tell on the mountain.